So with Charles Spicer, the book is Coffee with Hitler, the untold story of the amateur spies who tried to civilize the Nazis. The catastrophes ahead. It is May of 1937, the coronation, George VI. The embassy, the German embassy in London, is three buildings put together by the Ribbentrops. And we need to introduce a driving force in Ribbentrop's attempt to win the affection of the British public and then eventually to put the two states together. And the formula being Germany will take care of the continent and England can pay attention to its empire on the seas. However, the Ribbentrops are guided by Annalise Ribbentrop. And I tell Charles we must attend to Annalise because she outlived Ribbentrop, who was hanged in 1945, I believe. And
47,
thank you. And she wrote afterwards about her memories of living in London, where she was offended by the English habit of making fun of newcomers or the new boys. Annalise, she was well-to-do when she married Joachim von Ribbentrop. As I remember, her father was a champagne maker. Is that right, Charles?
Yes, Sekt, which is the German version of champagne, that the Henkel family. And the Henkel brand is still, I believe, the leading brand of sparkling German wine.
And her ambitions were to dominate British society. She wanted her son to Eton, her daughter privately schooled or to a private school that is equal to Eton. And she wanted people to come and pay obeisance to the new Germany. There's a party held at the embassy to inaugurate during this period the new ambassador, whose mission there is, because he speaks English perfectly and because he dresses like an English gentleman, always perfectly turned out, is meant to charm everyone. You describe a party that resembles something like a fraternity party. They fly food in from Germany. They cater it specially. There's champagne flowing in all directions. And all of English political society showed. One of the joys of Charles's book is that the Churchills are always present, but they're not the stars of the scene. I write down Halifax was there, Eden was there, Inskip was there, Van Sittart, the Churchills. The crush was overwhelming. The ambassadors from Canada, from the Dominions were all in attendance. And yet things didn't go well for Annalise because she wore the same color gown as Anthony Eden's wife. Was that the failure?
Well, that was sort of spotted by one of the newspapers and reporters and stuff, which is the sort of thing which would have upset her because it was snarky. It was mean-minded for that journalist to say that. But they had 1,300 guests, and although it was a big building, there was just too many people. And all of the world is in town for the coronation anyway. It's the big event of the night, although there was a competing reception at the Austrian embassy on the same night. But it was it was just overdone, so people couldn't get in. All the cars got log-jammed trying to get to the embassy, and so people had to get out of their taxis and their chauffeur-driven cars and complete the journey by foot. And when they got there, the passages weren't wide enough, so that the waiters couldn't get through. So the whole thing ended in a degree of chaos, from what I can see.
I have gone so fast past some of these amazing events. We need to pay attention to the fact that there were people who joined the English-German Fellowship, who were not inspired by trying to find a way to go forward and civilize the Nazis. They were Nazi sympathizers. And Lord Londonderry is important to mention. I think at this point, we've not mentioned the Mitfords, but there were prominent, and I wrote them down, Charles, it overwhelms me. They have two names. They have their real name and then they have their title. And they were also in attendance that night alongside Eden and Lothian. At this point, is Lothian beginning to have doubts? Does he already have doubts at that ceremony?
Yes, he's beginning to express these doubts, particularly to Ivan Maisky, who is the Russian ambassador in London, who's left us very detailed diaries, which are a fascinating resource for historian because they're contemporary from the cynical perspective of a very shrewd and cynical Russian observer who's a friend of Lothian's, a friend of Churchill's, and a friend of Van Sittart's, and assiduously notes And he points out that Lovian had realized that Hitler was on a path that was beyond redemption at this point.
Also, at this point, von Sittard recognizes that C.E. and Christie are valuable intelligence sources. That has not been true up to this point, I believe. My note says it's this time that von Sittard becomes, in effect, he's a volunteer MI6. Is that how he thinks of himself? My information is as good or better than theirs?
Well, funny enough, MI6 and MI5, they ultimately report to von Sittard. Well, certainly MI6 reports to von Sittard. So he has oversight of them, but they had remarkably poor sources of intelligence. They had no access to Goering, for example. So he sets up this parallel private detective. It was called Van's Detective Agency. And Christie had always been part of it. Christie had always been a source, but Conwell Evans had previously been more positive about the chances of civilizing the Nazis. But he realizes, prompted substantially by his friend Christie, that he's got that wrong. So he does a full volte-face in 37. And from then on, works consistently and bravely to just gather intelligence to what's going on. Because he's got these networks, he's got these friends, so why not use them?
Now, surprisingly, Hitler sends a representative to the coronation, von Blumberg, who is a respected senior military official, who is given a tour of Kent, of Canterbury, and meets the Baldwins and Edens. At this point, there is a mixed picture of what Hitler intends. Von Blumberg is welcomed. My reading of your presentation, he does not at all upset the English. Is that correct?
Well, he goes down very well. He's very charming. And it's similar to the circumstances around the time of the Olympics. There is a lot of apparently sincere goodwill. He's actually minister for war, which was a certain irony. And it's worth pointing out that Goering had wanted to go in that role. He wanted to represent the Führer at the coronation, but Ribbentrop nixed him. And it's interesting to see, because Blomberg loses his job. There's a scandal. He marries a much, much younger woman soon after, who turns out to have a police record for prostitution. And that's a scandal. And he's drummed out of the army after 40 years. Any positive effect we might have had on his mentality is nixed by the fact that he lost the job. And it's interesting to speculate that if Goering had come over, whether that would have changed the diplomatic path.
Yes, there's always the possibility of visits from Berlin to London. We've been emphasizing the London to Berlin travel all the time, either by train or by aircraft. But arriving, bringing in a senior Hitlerite figure would have been significant. All they have is Ribbentrop. A detail about Annalise Ribbentrop. She wants her son Rudolf to go to Eton. Eton rejects him. The papers make fun of Ribbentrop. They make fun of their awkwardness. And you tell me Westminster School, you've recently learned, where Rudolf eventually was placed, still has documents that connect to these events. It's as if, Charles, you've written a story that was yesterday.
That's fascinating.
And what we have here is a story that is growing in the front pages of the British newspapers. So we need to attend to what happens next before the crisis of 1938, which is a visit by the extremely lordly Halifax. We've not spent enough time talking about Halifax as a figure who inherits the foreign ministry once Anthony Eden resigns in protest over the accommodation to Berlin and what Eden sees as not paying attention to the rise of war. So next we're going to turn to Halifax's visit to Berghof. This is Coffee with Hitler by Charles Spicer, the untold story of the amateur spies who tried to civilize the Nazis. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.